This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
The hot stove is heating up as the Major League Baseball winter meetings concluded this past week in Orlando, Florida. And my, oh my, did the White Sox hit the jackpot, folks. That's right. Your Chicago White Sox win the Major League Baseball draft lottery as they defied the odds. And when I say that, you may be saying to yourself, wait a minute, Mellor, I thought the White Sox had the best chances of walking away with the first overall pick. They did. However, it was still only a 27% chance for them to win the number one overall pick in the 2026 draft. And so for them to go ahead and actually come through with a big win, that, my friends, I do think was pretty serendipitous, as we will bring you back to Tuesday evening on the MLB Network.
There are only two teams left. And I know, Brett, we might be seeing some theatrics right now. It's the Rays and the White Sox. The White Sox or the Rays. Which one will be the number one overall pick? It's time to start at number two. The team with the second overall pick in the upcoming MLB draft. The Tampa Bay Rays. Which means the number one pick in the upcoming MLB draft goes to the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox will land the top pick. The board has been filled at number 18. It started with the Reds. It worked our way up to number 12 with the Angels. And at number one, you see the Chicago White Sox.
Yes, sir, indeed. That is Greg Amsinger on Major League Baseball Network as they were broadcasting the Major League Baseball Draft Lottery on Tuesday Live. The Brett he was referring to was Brett Phillips, who actually spent a brief period of time in the White Sox organization. He was the representative of the Tampa Bay Rays, who ended up grabbing the second overall pick. But that's right, White Sox fans, your favorite baseball team, the Chicago White Sox, will be picking first overall, representing the White Sox at the Draft Lottery, was Harold Baines, the only man who the White Sox ever selected with the top overall pick in their history, who actually played for the franchise. They did have one pick prior to Harold Baines who did not actually play in the majors. But Harold Baines back in 1977 was the White Sox first overall pick. I would say that worked out pretty well, as Harold Baines would go on to have a Hall of Fame career. And now the White Sox will hopefully have an opportunity to go ahead and repeat some history. Chris Getz, the White Sox general manager, joined Greg Amsinger after they found out that they won the lottery and talked about what it meant to the franchise.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to just kind of boost what we have going on right now. I mean, it's an honor. I mean, it's a huge responsibility. And, you know, our group, I mean, I'm just so happy for everyone, quite honestly. And, you know, going into this whole thing, you know, you kind of prepared for all different scenarios emotionally. But, man, I can't understate how big of a deal this is.
Explain a bit more on it to our audience. What freedom you have to pick with have the number one pick in this draft?
Well, I mean, I'm still learning more and more about the draft. I'm getting familiar with some of the top names. And, you know, it looks like at the top of the draft that it's a really impressive one. But on top of that, when you look at the pool space that you're given and a chance to really, you know, walk away from a draft class and do some damage, you know, right, bring in some real talent. So, yeah, I look forward to diving in further, man. I'm just excited for our fan base and the people that are working for the Chicago White Sox.
And adding to an already young core that is so impressive. I mean, Colson Montgomery, among others, you're starting to see the pieces in the south side of Chicago.
No, I mean, last year as those players were making their way to the big leagues and performing really well, and we know that's not an easy thing to do. And, you begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And to bring in now a top pick, you know, to this group, I mean, it's just a big deal. It really is.
You could hear the excitement in Chris Getz's voice as he learned that they would have the top overall pick in this upcoming Major League Baseball draft. Again, that will take place in June. For those who may not be as familiar with the Major League Baseball draft process. So what I think is important to point out here is you heard the enthusiasm, but it's also important to recognize that there's still going to be an entire season left to come, an entire season of baseball, an entire college season, and an entire high school season for the prep prospects who the White Sox will be considering. Who will they be considering? Well, right now, the consensus top pick in this year's upcoming Major League Baseball draft is shortstop Rock Chalowski, who is attending UCLA. Rock Chalowski is a 20-year-old from California who is the son of a scout, a Major League Baseball scout, and former minor league player. So Rock Chalowski, you got to love that name too, right? I know everybody around Chicago who I heard this past week saying the name Rock Chalowski was getting excited about the possibility of just having a kid named Rock. That's a great baseball name, no doubt about it. But you can't draft that name alone. There needs to be talent. And Rock Chalowski is loaded with talent. He does everything well. Speed may not be his game, but everything else he does extremely well. He is a shortstop, and this should come as no surprise. If you start to watch and learn more about the draft prospects, it will basically be a foregone conclusion that all of the best players will be shortstops. And Rock Chalowski is no exception here. That's what he plays at UCLA. And he is projected as a potential plus defender at shortstop. Now, I think it's important to note that the White Sox, and you probably are well aware of this, just drafted a shortstop in the previous draft. That's right. Billy Carlson was their first overall pick in this last draft. And he is considered by many one of the greatest high school shortstops defensively that many scouts have ever seen. So that is the strength of Billy Carlson, who the White Sox just drafted. That's a good problem to have, though, because in baseball, all of your best athletes are playing shortstop, and it is much easier to take a shortstop and move them around to a different position where they will, in all likelihood, generally excel. You've seen that with a player like, hey, Fernando Tatis. He started out as the shortstop of the Padres, was very successful, struggled a little bit at the major league level defensively, has since been moved to right field, where he is a Platinum Glove Award winner. Not just a Gold Glove Award winner, but also a Platinum Glove Award winner. So that generally works out. Hey, look at someone like Javi Baez, who in his early 30s now has been moved off of shortstop by the Tigers, moved to center field last year, and was making jaw-dropping plays in the outfield for the Tigers. So shortstop, basically, that's a good thing if you're looking at, oh, we've got a shortstop in Colson Montgomery that we're all really excited about. Yeah, I get that, White Sox fans, but don't worry. Just because you're drafting a shortstop doesn't mean that they're going to be stealing away Colson Montgomery's position, or it doesn't mean that Colson Montgomery wouldn't necessarily be better served somewhere down the road, maybe being the White Sox third baseman for the long term, especially as he ages and maybe gets a little less athletic and maybe continues to fill out frame-wise. Even though Colson's already a big kid, there it would come as no surprise that if he gets a little bit bigger and slows down just a bit, third base might ultimately be Colson Montgomery's best position, even though he played elite-level defense in his half season in the major leagues last year. So, I digress. Rock Chalowski, that right now is the consensus name that you're going to keep an eye on throughout the season. I promise you, we will be talking a lot about him. He's somebody who I'm going to be asking a lot of experts around, basically leading up to spring training, because this is a perfect opportunity to go ahead and pick the brain of some of our favorite guests, people like Jim Callis and Keith Law. So I promise you, in the upcoming weeks, you will be hearing from them right here on White Sox Weekly. I did want to mention, though, that as I say the name Rock Chalowski, it's worth noting that don't necessarily fall in love with that name, because there's a possibility, even though it looks likely that if the draft happened today, he would be the first overall pick. There's also the possibility that a season passes and all of a sudden somebody else emerges. That happens quite frequently in baseball. A name to keep an eye on, Grady Emerson. He is a high schooler who's 17 years old. He'll be 18 when he's drafted. but he's a big kid. He's already 6'2", weighs a listed 180 pounds. So he's a big kid. He's lefty. I didn't mention Chalowski's righty. Grady Emerson's lefty with big tools, and he's got the potential with a big year to possibly work his way into the discussion for the White Sox as a possible option at pick 1-1. And then also another name worth keeping an eye on. People in Chicago may not love this, but LeBron. That's right, LeBron. Justin LeBron. He's the shortstop for Alabama. He just turned 21 years old, and he's considered the second best prospect in college baseball. So with a big year, Justin LeBron, who plays for the Crimson Tide, Alabama, he could work his way as well into that name. And there also might be somebody who we're not even thinking about. I always like to bring up the story. Hey, Paul Skeens, he was pitching for Air Force the winter before he was drafted after just dominating in a season at LSU. So all this is just something worth keeping an eye on. But we will be tracking it for you all season long right here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, Sox Fest Live returns to the Rimowa Theater presented by Rates, Blue Moon, and Wintrust. Celebrate the start of the season with music, entertainment, and insider conversations with members of the 2026 Clubhouse Saturday, January 31st. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. Speaking of insiders, up next, we will bring in ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jesse Rogers to recap the winter meetings. He was in attendance in Orlando. He'll join us next right here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
This is White Sox Weekly
on the home of the Chicago White Sox,
ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game, ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Speaking of exciting events, how about what went down this past week at the Major League Baseball winter meetings? We already touched on it in the first segment here, but Jesse Rogers was down in Orlando catching some sun. I doubt he probably even got out in the sun. He was probably holed up in a lobby, in a hotel lobby. But Jesse Rogers back from the MLB winter meetings and fresh off of a White Sox draft lottery win. ESPN MLB insider Jesse Rogers joins me right now on White Sox Weekly. Jess, so did you get a chance to catch any rays outside, or were you just in the lobby throwing back drinks with all the GMs and baseball beat reporters out there?
Yeah, the latter, definitely the latter. But there wasn't any sun anyway. It was rainy and cloudy most of the week in Orlando, so it's kind of a weird Florida week. But like you said, there's no time for that anyway. Everyone's inside at the lobby bar. I mean, there are two hotels kind of connected to each other, so There's one lobby and one lobby bar. Then there's like long hallway to the other hotel and another lobby bar, and that's where everyone's hanging out. So it's like, it was just back and forth all week. So, yeah, it was a lot going on, including the draft lottery.
Of course, that was the highlight for the White Sox. They come away. Now, they beat the odds, and I say that because even though they win and they had the highest chance of landing the number one overall pick, 27%, that means that there was still a 73% chance they did not walk away with the top pick. But they come away with it, and of course, everybody around here is talking about the name Rock Chalowski. I'll get to that in a moment, but what was your takeaway from the White Sox winning the lottery and just how big of a moment it could be for the organization?
Well, being the sort of cynical reporter that I am, I think we have to point out that there's a reason they're drafting so high in the Rule 5. There's a reason they're drafting so high in their amateur draft, right? Let's not forget the reasons that brought them to this point. But great organizations take advantage of moments like this. Like, you're in a bad moment as an organization, win-loss wise, but how do you turn it around? How do you take advantage of it? How do you take advantage of good fortune? Because as soon as the Twins were knocked down from one of the top couple spots, because they had a high percentage as well, it really was the White Sox pick to lose. And they got it. They got the number one pick. There's a consensus guy out there, as you mentioned. Hopefully he has a good junior season. So a lot of excitement. But I think at the same time, you have to remind yourself what got us here. And we don't want to be here again. We don't want to be drafting again. We don't want to be in the lottery again. We don't be drafting number one again. So take this good fortune, take these high picks, and do something with them. Be committed to the development of all these young players you have, and just don't celebrate it. You know, you don't celebrate drafting number one. You celebrate what that pick can do for your organization.
So I'm going to throw this out there with the caveat that it is very early, mid-December here, so everything should be taken somewhat with a grain of salt. But the consensus is that this is a good draft to land the top pick. And I mentioned his name, Rock Chalowski. Right now is the consensus top pick. However, worth mentioning, Grady Emerson is a high school shortstop. Also, a shortstop also. Chalowski, obviously a college player for UCLA. But nevertheless, it's still so early in the draft process. And I think this is one thing worth pointing out to baseball fans or just casual fans who maybe just assume, oh, sports, you know, you get the top pick, you have an idea of who it's going to be. Baseball, unlike any other sport, I think is there's a lot more room for twists and turns along the way, because it is, you still have a full season of baseball, you know, to come here for whether high school or collegiate for all of these prep players who will be eligible for the draft. And then also factor in something like, hey, a few years back, the consensus top pick was considered to be Dylan Cruz. He was an elite hitter who everybody knew was going to be the top overall pick. And there was a young kid who was at Air Force who nobody really had on their radars just yet, at least in terms of top pick. He hadn't even thrown a pitch for LSU yet. And sure enough, Paul Skeens in that next upcoming collegiate season would dominate to the point where the Pirates had a no-brainer choice to make him the top overall pick. And that's worked out quite well for them. So that's my little backstory as to why we can't get too far ahead of ourselves. But what is your thought about Rock Chalowski, Grady Emerson, and just what this means in terms of how the White Sox will be looking at this as they actually do make the pick up in June?
Well, it's just so nice to have the number one pick if you're White Sox brass, because you can really streamline your scouting. You're really scouting a couple, three guys, right, for the most part, for that pick, especially this year where it's really top-heavy and you kind of know who they are. But it's I never thought I'd be punching up the UCLA baseball schedule
right?
in December, but that's what I'm doing here, and you know, it starts next month, and it'll be so much fun for White Sox fans to follow him and maybe a couple of the other top guys as well, because you're so right. A full season to be played in high school and college, and it'd be one thing if these guys were 25 years old. You kind of know who you have no idea. Mm-hmm. They're all just, you know, maturing physically, emotionally, mentally. So right now he is, like you said, the consensus number one. And normally in December, you don't even have a consensus
yes.
number one. So it's unusual, and that's why you kind of just, you know, focus on him a little bit more this season, because he made such strides the last couple of years. I mean, what's interesting is the Sox watched him out of high school, thought about, you know, the draft with him there, but now here he is as potentially the number one pick. So they're familiar with Rock Chalowski, one of the best baseball names we're going to come across.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just makes their scouting so much easier, just looking at, you know, the top three or four guys and hopefully choosing from them with of course, the ability where a Paul Skeens can come out of nowhere. But that'll take care of itself as they watch the college season.
No doubt about it. Jesse Rogers, ESPN Major League Baseball Insider, joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right. Oh, and I didn't even bring it up, but we should also mention, no matter what, one of the bigger bonuses is the extra bonus pool money that the White Sox will have available to them. There's a lot of intricacies that goes into that, but that will give them more flexibility and creativity to work with in the second and third rounds, where they could potentially maybe offer a high schooler who is a first round talent who maybe doesn't like the numbers he's hearing from the later teams in the mid first round. So then sure enough, if you have extra bonus pool money, that's where having that actually becomes a huge advantage as well. Another area where teams can acquire talent is the Rule 5 draft, Jess. And the White Sox did quite the job last year selecting Shane Smith with the first overall pick with the Rule 5 pick. This year they had the second pick, and they made Jedickson Paez from the Red Sox their top pick. Now, he's a 21-year-old from Venezuela, And what do you know about him? What did you hear from people around the industry?
Yeah, I mean, talented, but hasn't pitched above high A. I'm correct about that, Jeff.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's going to be quite the project if he actually makes it to the big leagues and sticks with the White Sox, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the talent is there. That's probably obviously why they took him, for a guy that hasn't pitched above high A. And for people that don't know, you know, when you pick these guys up, they have to be on your major league roster for the entire season, or they go back to their old teams. So this is a guy that automatically is going to be given a chance, along with their second pick as well.
Alexander Alberto was the other pick.
Alberto, yeah. But I don't know, man. They hit a home run last year. Guy made the All-Star team. Great, great job. But that's quite the leap here from high A to the big leagues. He's 21 years old, so he's not like a teenager, but he's obviously not that seasoned. It'll be interesting. I mean, highly talented, and that is certainly why they took him. The numbers at the lower levels, really good. But, man, if both these guys stick on the major league roster for the entire season, that'd be quite something. That'd be some really good player development and scouting done by the White Sox 2 years in a row.
I think it's a good point by you to just show how outrageous a job it was that the White Sox were able to do in helping Shane Smith become an All-Star last year. And that's not something that should be expected each and every year. So we should, like, put it into perspective. But at the same time, I will say Brian Bannister, I do think, has really shown a proclivity to being able to identify talent and potentially get the best out of some of those players. So I think that's why White Sox fans, at least I would say, Brian Bannister has earned my trust a little more somewhat than in the past. All right, pivoting off of the Rule 5 and to talk a little bit around what else happened at the winter meeting, some of the biggest signings that occurred, Kyle Schwarber, Pete Alonso, Edwin Diaz. I think those are the headliners to start with. And Schwarber's the only one who remains with his team. He stays with the Phillies 5 years, $150 million, though. Pete Alonso moves to Baltimore. And Edwin Diaz, oh, those plucky Dodgers finally get a piece at the back end of their bullpen. So what are your thoughts about the three big signings that came out of the free agent, the winter meetings here?
Sure. I mean, they all three of them, in a lot of ways, reset the market for those positions. I mean, if you think about Alonso and Schwarber, as good as they are, and this is a testament about how good they are, 5 years and $30 million a year just to do one thing, essentially. Alonso
hit dingers.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Both of them. Even though Alonso will play the field, he's not really, you know, go glove. He doesn't run. You know, Schwarber doesn't run. It's one thing. One thing. 5 years, $150 million. So to me, it's like, what does that mean for Bellinger or Tucker? Mm. Or Bregman that play the field, some of them at Gold Glove caliber, some of them who steal bases. I'm working on a piece about this for next week for ESPN.com. It really resets the market and is, again, a testament to a guy like Schwarber who's going to do one thing for the next 5 years and get paid handsomely for that one thing. And same thing with Diaz in a way. I mean, $23 million to close. Granted, it's just 3 years, but I don't care about the years. I care about $23 million a year to close. That is ace money on many teams, if not a number two on very good teams. I'm talking about starting-wise. So he got starting pitching money to close, and it's the Dodgers being the Dodgers. Obviously, Tanner Scott was signed as the top guy last year. Didn't work out too well. We don't care. Doesn't mean the next guy won't. Doesn't mean that Tanner Scott won't be an all-star this year. You just keep going if you have the money, and that's what they're doing. I'm not surprised. I'm not. The Dodgers did this. I think they're going to do more. They're going for the three-peat, and then the economic landscape might change with the new CBA. But until it does, they have a shot at doing something that's very special. A three-peat in baseball just doesn't happen very often, and they have the wherewithal to do it. They have the farm system. They have the money. And so let's bring in some new blood in Edwin Diaz, make sure our bullpen's good, because playing Jeff 7 months, you know, 8 months, if you include the WBC for a lot of these guys, that's hard to do 3 years in a row, and that's what the Dodgers are trying to do.
You mentioned Kyle Tucker. You mentioned Cody Bellinger. Any idea as to who the front-running teams might be to obtain their services?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the usual suspects. And now we have to include the Blue Jays as a usual suspect now. They haven't been in the past, but now they are. So I could absolutely see Kyle Tucker to the Blue Jays. Not close. Not happening. I could absolutely see Bellinger back to the Yankees. I don't think it's close. Like, it's not imminent. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers are always waiting in the wings. I think the Diaz deal is indicative of the kind of deal the Dodgers would do. Probably not a reunion with Bellinger, but you never know. Meaning high AAV short term, maybe with deferrals. I don't think they're ready to do another 10-year deal with somebody, but they'll pay $40 million a year to a Kyle Tucker or maybe even a Bellinger at a shorter term, like the Red Sox did with Bregman last year. So it's kind of those guys. I heard a scenario where, you know, move Juan Soto over to left, and that opens up Bellinger or Tucker for first base there in New York, or certainly Bellinger, I'm sorry, right field there. Certainly first base in New York is open now that Alonso's gone. So we know Steve Cohen has money. Bellinger's out there. Tucker's out there. So one of the New York teams is going to get one of them probably. Toronto, a good chance of getting one of them. And the Dodgers are waiting in the wings in case somebody wants a shorter-term deal.
Last one for you here, Jess, as I appreciate your time as always. Jesse Rogers, ESPN Major League Baseball insider, joining me here. Okay, you mentioned the Mets a couple times there, and I think White Sox fans will be intrigued by this next question. Tarek Skubal, he has 1 year left on his contract with the Tigers. There have been some rumors floating around about the possibility of the Mets trying to potentially blow the Tigers away with an offer. Do you think there is any validity to that?
Oh, I think they'll try. I think everyone that has a decent enough farm system and that could pay him long-term is going to try. That could include the Dodgers as well. They wouldn't be there doing their due diligence. I just don't think the package is going to match up. I just don't think Scott Harris, the Tigers, can trade Skubal and sell to the fan base the way he needs to, unless it's home run after home run after home run guy back, major league players and prospects, even if it's for 1 year Skubal. I could be wrong about that, but the Tigers could win the World Series with Skubal. I mean, they could, or get to the World Series at least. The AL Central's winnable. We know that. So that start right there. And if they trade him, I'm not sure that they have a chance to win it. Obviously, I'd have to see the package back. So I'm going to say they keep him, but teams are going to do their best to try to get him.
Jesse, as always, I appreciate your time, man. Back from Florida, thanks for carving out a little bit. And you're not going to get any vitamin D here in Chicago this weekend, but we're glad to have you back in the city. Take it easy, my man.
You got it, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Again, that's Jesse Rogers covering baseball for ESPN. He just actually signed an extension with ESPN. They put that out there on the social media platforms this past week. So Jesse Rogers, one of the best, great guy and great reporter. So glad to have him contributing here on White Sox Weekly to give us a wrap-up of the Major League Baseball winter meetings. I'm Jeff Meller. When we come back, Anthony Kay, the newest signing for the White Sox, met with the media. We'll share with you what he had to say about why he chose the White Sox. That's coming up next, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Happy holidays, White Sox fans. Celebrate this offseason with the perfect gift for family and friends. A White Sox Holiday Flex Pack starting at just $66 and redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2026 season. To learn more and purchase, visit whitesox.com/holiday packs. I'm Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Speaking of gifts for White Sox fans, how about the White Sox newest signing, Anthony Kay? We talked about it a lot last week, but Anthony Kay, the former first-round pick who went over and pitched in the Japanese League the last couple of seasons for Yokohama and actually had an absolutely outstanding year last year where he was dominant in 155 innings. He decided that the White Sox were the team for him. There was a lot of interest from other teams around baseball because of the exceptional season he had. Anthony Kay met with the media earlier this week, and one of the first questions that he addressed was why the White Sox appealed to him.
You know, I had a Zoom call with you know, a bunch of the pitching guys and coordinators and, you know, with Will Venable, and you know, it seems like a really good fit for me to, you know, come back to America and kind of, you know, get back into the big leagues. And you know, I think, you know, we had a pretty similar vision of, you know, what I wanted to do, and I think it was a really good fit.
What is that vision that you want to do that's similar with you and the White Sox?
Yeah, I think you know, getting to start again, and mm-hmm. you know, finally get to, you know, be consistent in the big leagues, I think was very, you know, attractive for me to come back and, you know, be a key fit for the White Sox and helping them, you know, win some games.
Anthony, just with the success you had in Japan, what was kind of your thought process of, were you kind of always intending to try to return to the States? How much did you consider kind of continuing your success over there? And, you know, what was really the winning factors for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an option to, you know, stay over there. I think, you know, originally, you know, when I first signed over there, the goal was to be over there for 2 years and come back. And I think, you know, once I had the option to come back, you know, really, it really played a big role in you know, staying home a little bit closer to home and, you know, being able to play in the big leagues again.
And you had a lot of success last year with, you know, showing hitters a lot of different fastball shapes and really, you know, being able to mix sinker, cutter in the zone. How much, when you talk about what the alignment you found with the White Sox pitching development and, you know, coaches, how much did you see like your style of pitching working with what they're already trying to accomplish here?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely showed me, you know, what kind of stuff they had ready for me. And I think, you know, just the stuff that they showed me really showed that, you know, they can help me out with, you know, game planning and scouting and stuff like that to, you know, be successful this year.
Hey, Anthony, just you mentioned those preliminary talks with the, you know, the pitching, you know, staff of the organization. Just kind of what stood out to you just, you know, through those conversations over Zoom? You know, they hired Zach Bove recently. Just kind of what stood out to you just about the infrastructure that like Bannister has kind of put in place?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was kind of the success that they had with, you know, Eric Fetty coming back over from Korea. I think it was pretty similar situation to, you know, be able to, you know, come back over and kind of thrive in the role of, you know, being back in the big leagues. I think another thing is, you know, the success that they had with Garrett Crochet and, you know, having him go from a reliever back to a starter, I think kind of, you know, show that they have a plan for guys like me. And, you know, it really showed that, you know, success that they've had is was a huge part of it.
Hey, Anthony, just more a couple of the biggest things that you learned about yourself during the last couple of years over in Japan.
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of lost a little bit of my confidence back when I was back in America, you know, being up and down and DFA'd and all that. And I think, you know, going over to Japan and being consistently a starter for a couple of years kind of helped me, you know, regain that confidence as a pitcher and kind of helped me, you know, develop and you know, be consistent and kind of find myself.
Was there a moment where it's like, all right, things are clicking again, that you knew that, all right, I'm back on that right track that you wanted to be on?
I'd say probably my first year there. Once we made the playoffs, I pitched really well in the playoffs and things kind of clicked and, you know, I kind of, you know, never looked back and, you know, was really successful in my second year.
And then just overall, just what does this opportunity mean to you once again to get this chance to be back playing ball in the States?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful for it. You know, that was the plan 2 years ago when I first went over there was, you know, to come back and pitch in the big leagues and, you know, going to try and do everything I can to be successful and you know, stay here.
Just what would you say are kind of, you know, for people who last saw you pitch here in the U.S., like what do you feel like are the big differences in you as a pitcher, you know, now a couple of years later after, you know, what you've been able to work on and have success with over there?
Yeah, I think, you know, the sinker, adding the sinker was, you know, a huge part to my success, you know, last year. And I think, you know, just being more aggressive and, you know, attacking in the zone. You know, I think a couple of years ago I had a little bit of control problems and, you know, was just, you know, nitpicking around the zone a little bit. I think, you know, 2 years over there kind of helped me, you know, find the zone a little bit, be aggressive, you know, limit the walks a little bit and, you know, be more successful.
Anthony, you know, we asked Eric Fetty, I think, these questions when he came back, and, you know, you had a little bit of struggles over here. You go to Japan, and you've talked a little bit about it, but what is kind of the mindset when you go there? Do you feel like I'm trying to rebuild myself? Is another chance? I mean, you're getting obviously paid to go over there and play, but, you know, you go from a first rounder to going over there. How does that kind of change your mindset and kind of refocus just your competitive nature?
Yeah, I mean, the goal obviously was always to come back after the 2 years. I think, you know, you kind of got to go over there with, you know, an open mind and kind of just, you know, I didn't really expect too much. Just wanted to go over there and, you know, experience, you know, their culture and, you know, the way they play the game. And I think, you know, once I was over there and, you know, accepted all that and, you know, I was able to have success.
Just what kind of, like, it's a little bit of a stylistically different, you know, type of offense in that league. I'd say more contact heavy. And obviously you've kind of found a lot of success of getting ground balls, kind of working with that higher contact rate. Are there things from, you know, facing, you know, Japanese hitters that, you know, you kind of took things away with or, you know, prompted development in your game just from facing like hitters who are have a little bit differently wired?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, my first year, you know, I really wanted to, you know, pitch like I was in America, you know, get a lot of strikeouts and all that. And then, you know, I struggled a little bit my first year there over there and, you know, just giving up a lot of, you know, free walks and stuff. And I think, you know, once I kind of realized to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive and, you know, attack the zone, I think my second year, you know, that showed that, you know, that's why I had the year that I had.
Anthony, the White Sox have kind of built a pretty cohesive young core here moving forward, coming off, you know, a couple rough seasons. What do you know about the organization as a whole, aside from like the conversations you had getting you to come here?
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't, you know, paid attention too much to American baseball the last 2 years, but, you know, just talking to, you know, the coaching staff, it seemed like there was a, you know, exciting young core over here and, you know, a bunch of young pitchers that, you know, can show themselves. And I think, you know, hopefully I can do my best to kind of help them and, you know, try and be, you know, a little bit of a try and help them learn a little bit and kind of, you know, find themselves and, you know, whatever they need, you know, I'll be there for them to, you know, kind of help them out.
So there you go. Newest member of the White Sox, Anthony Kay. I do expect him to have a rotation spot when the season begins. The lefty, former first round pick at one time from the Mets after two successful seasons in the Japanese League, comes back stateside and will be mixed in with some of that young talent that you heard him reflecting upon. And also, how about that? The success the White Sox had with Eric Fetty was part of the reason that they appealed to Anthony Kay. And a bit of a surprise, the success they had converting Garrett Crochet from a reliever to a starter was also something that he thought boded well for him in the future, which I found interesting. And I think just reinforces what the White Sox are doing as an organization pitching-wise and how it is being observed around baseball that people are recognizing, hey, Brian Bannister and Chris Getz and Will Venable, they seem to know what they're doing. So that is another exciting reason why I think the White Sox are moving in the right direction. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we got some news this past week regarding the newest members of the Baseball Hall of Fame, including a first, a father-son team that I'll tell you about coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the home of the Chicago White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
The hitter swings at the arm motion. Into deep left center for Mitchell. And we'll see you tomorrow night.
Ah, that brings me back to my childhood, folks. 1991, to wrap up Game 6, a legendary Jack Buck calling Kirby Puckett's walk-off home run to send the 1991 World Series between the Twins and Braves to a deciding Game 7. And brevity, but Jack Buck, who is a Ford C. Frick Award winner, and sometimes brevity is best. And it was perfect. It encapsulated the moment. And anybody who was watching at that moment was obviously going to be joining you tomorrow night for Game 7 of the World Series between the Twins and Braves. And it led to one of the classic World 7 games, or one of the classic Game 7s in World Series history, when Jack Morris outdueled John Smoltz. Excuse me. I'm just getting excited thinking about it. In a 10-inning affair in which the Twins won 1-0, Jack Morris pitching a 10-inning complete game shutout in one of the all-time classics that may go down as the greatest Game 7s in baseball history before this season's Game 7, right? Possible. Worth a debate, something we can maybe entertain down the road. The reason I'm playing the Jack Buck highlight is because we got some good news this past week when the Ford C. Frick Award was announced, and it was none other than Jack Buck's son, Joe Buck, who, in my opinion, had one of the coolest moments himself when he got to pay homage to his late great father, calling a Game 6 World Series of his own.
How many World Series Game 6s have ended with a home run? This, by the way, is the 63rd Game 6 in World Series history out of a total of 107 World Series.
I remember one, working it with your dad in 91. Kirby Puckett, Jack's famous call. We'll see you tomorrow night.
There's one inside, 2-0.
Nothing else. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Freeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
You got to love that. That was Joe Buck, again, who was announced as the Ford C. Frick Award winner for excellence in broadcasting by Baseball's Hall of Fame this past week. So he will go in as a member. They will be the first father and son duo to win the Ford C. Frick Award. And for my money, that moment by Joe Buck was extremely cool when he had the opportunity to do the same. And you hear Tim McCarver and him earlier in that game when the Cardinals would advance against the Rangers to force a Game 7 of their own. And it was pretty cool. I remember watching that and just thinking, man, how awesome to be able to do that in that moment. And Joe Buck met the moment, and that's why he is obviously going in to the Baseball Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. Well-earned. Joe Buck, love to see it. He will be there as a Ford C. Frick Award winner alongside his father. Again, the first father-son duo to ever do that. And at a young age, too. Joe Buck, just in his mid-50s, 54, I believe. So quite the achievement for the voice of Monday Night Football on ESPN. Wonder if he'll get back and call a few more baseball games just to kind of commemorate a fantastic season. I think that's certainly possible. A couple people who will not be going into the Hall of Fame as they did not meet the minimum requirement: Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. That's something I will probably discuss next week in greater length. I want to talk about that, but we're running out of time here on White Sox Weekly this week. So just something to maybe pencil in for next week when we reconvene. I want to dive a little bit into that. I think that's something that completely irks me. Hey, White Sox fans, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. That's going to do it for this week's edition of White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. I want to say thank you very much to Jesse Rogers for joining us after wrapping up the Major League Baseball winter meetings, and of course, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, which is Brendan Riley. That does it for us. We'll talk to you again next week on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.